get Sister Lee and our sister here to lead us. Huh? So those who know Mandarin, they have this Hanyi Pinyin of the what they call Heart Sutta. Huh? So if you can follow, you follow, because they will chant it slow this time. Huh? They won't do their usual, the fast mode one. Huh? Okay, we pay respect three times. Huh? Homage to all the worthy ones. Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Huh?
Let's recite mindfully, pay respect, by reciting the name of three times, name of Buddha, three times, name of Goddess of Mercy, followed by one time, Heart Sutra. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Ho.
Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Ho. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Ho. Namo Guan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Guan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Guan Si Ying Pu Sa.
Mo Ye Po Lo Mi Duo Xin Xin. Guan Si Dai Pu Sa Xin Sen. Mo Ye Po Lo Mi Duo Si. Zhao Jian Wu Yun Jie Kong Du Yi Jie Ku Er. Se Li Zi Se Bu Yi Kong Kong Bu Yi Se Se Ji Si Kong Kong Ji Si Se Sou Xiang Xing Zi Ji Bu Lu Si Se Li Zi Si Zhu Fa Kong Xiang Bu Sen Bu Mie Bu Kou Bu Jing Bu Zhen Bu Jian Si Bu Kong Zhong Wu Se Wu Sou Xiang Xing Zi Wu Yan Er Bi Se Zhen Yi无色声香味触法无眼界乃至无意识界无无明意无无明尽乃至无老死意无老死尽无苦集灭道无自意无得已无所得故菩提萨多依般苦婆罗蜜多故心无挂碍无挂碍故无有恐怖离见倒梦想究竟涅槃三世诸佛依方圆婆罗蜜多故得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提故知般若婆罗蜜多是大神咒是大明咒是无上咒是无等等咒能除一切苦证实不虚故说般若婆罗蜜多咒即所咒业揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃
萨埵萨埵萨埵 OK we will start our Theravada chanting Homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Sanghang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami Panati pata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Sura miraya macca pamadathana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Sadhu 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 Okay, pay homage mindfully and with the sadha to all the worthy ones. Okay, very good afternoon to all, brothers, sisters in the Dhamma. Just relax yourself. Before I start, a happy coming Vesak. Because Vesak day is this Saturday. So it's a triple occasion to recall to mind the triple occasion of Lord Buddha's birth, enlightenment and parinibbana. So it is a very wholesome occasion, very auspicious occasion. So make full use of Vesak to actually develop your cultivation and the understanding of his teaching. You serve him best through understanding his teacher. That's why he always tell the monk, he who sees my teaching sees me. Understand that? So if you really want to be close to the Buddha, if you really want to pay your gratitude and respect to him, what he wants from you is just the understanding of his teaching. He said when you have that, you more than repay whatever you need to repay. Because this is the Dhamma that he actually want the world to have. So Vesak day is very special. So make full use of it. Then make sure each and every one of you really make full use of this coming Vesak so that you can be a blessing to all. And at the same time you can make use of that day to develop the faith in him, to cultivate so that it can make a big difference to your life. This morning I was at SJBA actually. I was giving a talk there. Then they were singing this beautiful song, Vesak Day, followed by, I think, there's a very good Mandarin hymn, Gu Lao De Lun Hui. You heard of it before? It's a very nice song, and this lady can sing so well together with the man, and it's so meaningful. Then even the Vesak Day song, is it? They adores the coming of Lord Buddha, because they understand he has a very, very important message to share with mankind. His message can bring about enlightenment, liberation. He can free our mind from all suffering. He can transform our world, our planet, into a much better planet. So that's why it is very meaningful. So make full use of it. Okay, then we will start. So before we start again, we will read this opening verse. The last two sessions, I think I forgot about it. We will read the verse for opening a sutta. So it is good to repeat it, so that you bear in mind how rare and how profound this sutta is, the Heart Sutta. Okay, verse for opening a sutta. This one is, you have to turn to your earlier page, I think. After page Romanized 25, before the actual part 1, before page 1, just before page 1. Verse for opening a sutta. So Shen Hua said, the unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true teaching. So this verse, as an opening to the sutta, is very meaningful. It speaks of how rare this sutta is. It has certain very important keywords. The unsurpassed means no other sutta can surpass this. It's profound and it's wonderful. So the wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. Not hundreds of millions of years. Aeons. You know how long is aeons or not? So this will actually tell you clearly how difficult is it for you to encounter the Buddha Dharma and also those sutta that can really awaken you. Then he said, you must make this determination. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. So you can make that resolve. It will help you a lot. Okay, now we continue from where we stopped. We were at page 16, the meaning of the sutta. Okay. Before we go into the sutta proper, you turn to your notes. There are some short notes that Sister Lee has helped to prepare. Everybody has a copy? Okay. Okay, now we will read. The 10 Heart Sutta plus Meditation class at Wu Ping Ching Sir, dated 22nd April 2012, time 3 to 6. Okay, before we start this, I just want to preempt Miss Lee. I got an announcement to make. Since Vesak is Saturday, this coming Saturday, so the coming Sunday class for Heart Sutta, we stop for 1 week, so that you can have a good rest after Vesak. Then you can have enough time to recover and do what you want from your whatever busy activity of yours. Because some of you have your family and world-to-world matter to attend to. So it's only fair you have time for your own activity too. Because Saturday will not be an easy day for most of us. As Buddhists, Vesak Day is very unique, very significant. So you will be moving around. Some of you will be helping out, doing a lot of very, very good deeds and wholesomeness. So we should actually rejoice. Then we should actually make full use of what we have. Okay, so please take a note. Sister Lee will send the notice out. Okay, short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta discussed. Part 1. Recap and emphasize of the previous lesson. Okay, this one, I hope, is the final time we have to go through this again. Because you have sufficient. You go through the notes, you have sufficient. What you need to develop the understanding of the Buddha Dharma, to train your mind to cultivate. So I will read to you what I said. Then this is like a final reminder. Brother Teo reminds us all not to be heedless anymore, and instead to strive on with heedfulness to diligently make use of this great window of opportunity to cultivate, to gain liberation from birth and death. When the Buddha Sasana or his dispensation, Buddha Sasana is also called the Buddha's dispensation, means the era during which the teaching is still available. That's why in Pali it's called the Sasana. The English equivalent word is a dispensation. It's still around because according to the Buddha, it is very difficult indeed to be born as a human being. The Mandarin express it very well. The Mahayana always mention it this way. 人生难得. It's very difficult to have a human birth. The analogy I already told you. Every 100 years, you throw one turtle egg with an opening bigger than the turtle head, slightly bigger, floating in the ocean. Every 100 years, it is turtle surface once. The probability of this turtle hitting direct into that turtle egg hole, that is the probability of becoming a human being. So it's very, very rare. And even more rare and difficult is to be born during the era of the Buddha Sasana, to encounter the Buddha Dharma. That's why in Mahayana, they also got this famous saying, Fofa Nanwen. Fofa is the Dhamma, Buddha Dharma. For is Buddha, Fa is the Dhamma. Nanwen means very difficult to come across, very difficult to perceive. So do follow the advice of the Buddha to strive on with heedfulness and do not be heedless anymore. For this great window of opportunity is indeed very, very, very rare. So please do not be complacent to let it slip away, for you will truly regret how foolish you were if you were to let it slip by. For those who know, this is really, really very rare, golden opportunity, and you don't hold on to it, make full use of it. If you allow it to slip away, it's really a waste, a waste. It's just like the merchant that met Sakyamuni Buddha immediately after his enlightenment. He cannot recognize him. That's why he spoke to him. After that, he just walked away. It's something like that. How really you can be so foolish as to have met the Sammasambuddha and yet not recognizing who he is and just let it pass by, slip by. The earlier Heart Sutta short note that emphasized on the following important basic teachings of the Buddha are more than enough to help you develop your cultivation. They are the importance of cultivating the 5 spiritual faculty. This is the topic I spoke at this morning's Dhamma talk at SJBA. I spoke on the importance of understanding the 5 hindrances of mind and the 5 spiritual faculty as taught by the Buddha. So this one is very important. You have to cultivate the spiritual faculty. Without this, you cannot understand his teaching. Without this spiritual faculty, the 5 hindrances of mind are very powerful. You cannot overcome them. Then the second one is having right views with regards to the law of karma to develop the heedfulness to follow the advice of the Buddha. Means all evil you have to avoid. you have to constantly cultivate wholesomeness and goodness. Then you have to purify your mind, develop the wisdom. Then the third one, of course, is importance of cultivating heedfulness, apamada. For the heedless are as if dead. So this one is very important. You have to cultivate, train your mind to be heedful. Then the fourth one is importance of understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha and the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, especially the second turning. That is to constantly investigate the Dhamma via the second turning of the Four Noble Truths to develop your own understanding. You must have your own understanding, otherwise you won't progress. Or chintamaya panya. You just believe or commit to knowledge, no use. To develop this chintamaya panya, one need to constantly inquire, reflect and contemplate on the Buddha Dharma or the Four Noble Truths as proclaimed by the Buddha. And not just via believing what the Buddha said and then committing them to memories and store the so-called Dharma up as knowledge. For the true Dharma and wisdom is an understanding, and it is alive, a living Dharma that can be experienced and understood from moment to moment. Whereas knowledge and memories is of the past, and is very rigid and fixed, and they can make you very rigid in your views. So that summarizes all the important aspects of the Dhamma. So now we come to the Heart Sutra proper. The short notes. Somebody asked, what are deviant views? So I answered, deviant views means deviated or wrong views. So deviated, you know, not correct. Then deviant also have the word devious, not only deviated, devious. Means deviant and deviated and devious view, born of delusion that can condition one's suffering and misery. So deviant views are more serious than wrong view. So when you have deviant views, you can not only you make mistake, you make very serious mistake. That's why they say when you cultivate wrongly, you do the wrong samadhi. It end up as deviant samadhi. Deviant samadhi, you know, very devious type of samadhi. What is affliction? Affliction is mental suffering conditioned by one's three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So affliction is here and then now. You will be afflicted because the evil roots are there. If you don't have evil root, you don't have delusion, nothing can make you miserable. There is no affliction. Then the unmoving mind of true suchness. This is a very beautiful description. The true mind with the enlightenment factors of samadhi and upeka or equanimity. That's why this mind is unmoving. Our Buddha nature, zuzu putong, you understand not? True nature, unmoving mind of true suchness, zuzu putong. You see, you must understand, this is a very important understanding. When you understand that this Buddha nature of ours is already zuzu putong, means eternally such, there is no movement, no activity, nothing. That's why they call it pusan bumiye, no arising, no ceasing. But then how come you can never perceive it? You know why? Do you know why you cannot perceive it? Like the Buddha said, each and every one of us, we have this same Buddha nature. It's with us all. But why can't you perceive it? How come you cannot understand? How come you never know you already have it? Why? What is it? Yeah, that is one of the reasons. when you go deeper into it, let's say you investigated, then you come to know, oh, really, it was there all the while. How come I so stupid? I never knew. Do you know why you cannot, the normal people cannot see it? Even cultivator who cannot understand also cannot see it. You can meditate for umpteen years, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. If you don't understand what that nature is, you will never touch it. You will never know what it is. Actually, it's very easy. The Buddha said, the Buddha nature is always there. Never a single moment not there. The only trouble is living beings are so deluded. They cling onto the form and mind, thinking that is what they are. Understand? You see, your nature is always there. But the trouble is, the form and mind, which come and go, the stirring of the mind, the creation of life, the form and mind, the consciousness, the thinking mind, the thought, they are not you. Understand? Since they are not you, but how come they arise in you? That's why you have to find out, you have to meditate. First, it cannot be me, it cannot be you. Why? Because they come and they go. They arise and they disappear. If what arises can disappear, how can it be you? Correct not? If it's you, you must have died with it, isn't it? Because it's gone. That's why it's not you. If it's not you, then why do they arise in you? Because through delusion, you stir your mind, you allow it to arise, then you grasp and cling to this, what they call mundane mind, the thinking mind, the false you. In Mandarin, it's very good. They call it jia xiang. Understand? The what they call jia is what? The false one. Huh? The false one. That's why they sometimes use a very good word, false thinking. Yeah? You know what is false thinking? Wang xiang. That's why qi xing dong nian is a very good description. Once you arise a thought or a mind, it stir your activity. The thinking start. So the mind actually is already in the state of what they call pure silent awareness. The true nature is already suchness. True suchness is already there. But the living being's problem is you never understood that it was always there. You cling onto your thought, the five aggregate of form and mind, wanting to know, wanting to find out what the thing is. So what happened? You go and think. That's not all. You create your own thinking. Every moment of consciousness, you think. So what happened? Like the clear, bright sky. How come sometimes you cannot see the sun? Huh? Why? Because? What happened to the sky? Huh? The clouds there. Yeah. When the clouds come out, what happened? It obscure, yeah. It blocked the sunlight, isn't it? That's why it cannot shine for, isn't it? Your Buddha nature is like that. That sunlight under there. Ever radiating. Ever shining, true suchness is always there, clear and bright. But the trouble is like the cloud. When it come out, it block the sun. The moment you cling to your five aggregate of form and mind, the moment you are preoccupied with your thinking, the moment your mind stir, you lost yourself. You get entangled with the thought, the thinking. It's like the cloud came and cloud your nature. That's why your Buddha nature is being clouded. Understand? You can never perceive it. You can never come into contact with it. Because your mind can only do one thing at a time. Either you are with that nature or you are lost in the thought, lost in the creation, deludedly cling on to the five aggregate of form and mind, Sakaya Ditti, which is not you. That's why when you understand this, meditation is very simple. The Buddha Dharma is so simple. So this is a very important understanding. True suchness, if you understand this, then you don't use your thought. You just silent. you will feel it. And it's so easy. But then the problem with living being is you have to live life. The moment you live life, you have to use your thought. And the moment you use your thought through delusion, you grasp and you cling. That's why you go back to square one. You get entangled again. You become deluded again. So wisdom is very important. The moment you have understanding and wisdom, your mind free. Everything dispersed. There is clarity. Then after that, whether cloud or no cloud, you are with that true nature. You are always there with the suchness, with the wisdom, with the understanding. Then that time you know how to use the thought, the form and mind. Then no more problem. Then whether cloud or no cloud, that nature ever radiating, ever shine forth. Then you don't complain anymore. You never say, "Oh, you're the sun," no more. Because the sun is always there. Understand? Like your true nature is always radiating, always there. Whether you can perceive it or not depends on your understanding. Okay? So we move on. Okay, we finished that one. Then there is a question. Why Buddha specifically states the duration of 7 years maximum and 7 days to realize the enlightenment of at least an anagami if one were to maintain this four arousing of mindfulness or four foundation of mindfulness, which is the satipatthana practices as taught by the Buddha? So this one, I think Ng Bee asked the question. It's a very good question. So the answer is, the four arousing of mindfulness or four foundation of mindfulness as taught by the Buddha is very unique, because according to the Buddha, this four arousing of mindfulness is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destruction of suffering and grief, for reaching the right path, for the realization of Nibbana. Then not only that, the Buddha continued by telling the bhikkhu, "Verily, O monk or O bhikkhu, should any person maintain this four arousing of mindfulness in this manner for 7 years, for 6 years, for 2 years, let alone a year, then for 7 months, 2 months, 1 month, half a month, or even 1 week, then by him again, one of the two friction is proper to be expected." Friction means become enlightened. Wisdom or knowledge, I put bracket, is not really knowledge. But this one, they sometimes use jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality. They still use this word, but you must put an inverted comma there. It's actually wisdom. The wisdom type, not the rigid type. Here and the now. Or if some form of clinging or grasping is still present, at least the state of a non-returner or anagami. Anagami is the third stage of sainthood, before arahant. So this one is very useful. So you have to actually pay attention. Do you know why the Buddha say ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu? Ekayano means the only way. O bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for reaching the right path, for realizing the enlightenment, Nibbana. Actually, it's the only way. Without awareness, without the four foundation of mindfulness, no way. You cannot realize this. That's why it's always a ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu. Ekayano is the only way. But there are some books or some author who say they redefine this part. They say because they're very scared. This one like saying only the Buddha's teaching can realize enlightenment. No. As long as you don't have this sati and awareness, if you don't cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness, you can go by any other religion, method or technique. You cannot realize. even the so-called Buddhist meditation cannot. It is the only way, because the only way is through that nature awareness, anasana. And you have to be aware of these four things, which are very important. That's why it's not what some of them interpret. Some of them interpret as one of the way, understand not, to play safe, understand, so that people don't come after them. It's not important. But if you understand, then you will know. This is the only way. That's why the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness is very important. The daily mindfulness, the sati sampajana, clear comprehension, and mindfulness cultivation. This is the assurance given by the Buddha. So it is worthwhile to give it a trial, isn't it? Just sacrifice a maximum of 7 years to cultivate the satipatthana, or four foundation of mindfulness. And your future existence, should you choose to come back, is all set and taken care of. That is, you will have no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety, no more sadness and unhappiness or suffering, etc. from then on. Worth the while, isn't it? So strive on with heedfulness and do not be heedless anymore. Okay? So you decide, your life, you decide. So whatever that need to be said is already said. So you make your own decision. Okay, part 3 is on meditation. This one I will read. Yes, you have a question?
From the Satipatthana, yes. The Buddha mentioned only the attainment of non-returner or anagami.
Yes.
Okay. Does it mean that we can't attain arahantship if following this, only anagami can be achieved?
No. What the Buddha mean is, if let's say after you have done this for 7 years, you still got a little bit of clinging or grasping, then at least you will become an anagami. Otherwise you should become arahant. If you maintain this four foundation of mindfulness for a maximum of 7 years, actually nobody needs so long. If you really can continuously cultivate, very fast you will awaken. 7 years is already allowance for a lot of things. Allowance for a lot of things. You don't really need so long. Yes.
Another question is, if not the highest arahantship, what about the sotapanna and anagami?
No, the sotapanna, all those things, you will go through very fast. But what he is telling you is, you go and cultivate this four foundation of mindfulness, you should be an arahant maximum within 7 years. Maximum. But sometimes certain people, when they cultivate, the last part, mana, you know what is mana or not? Subtle conceit. The minor conceit or the subtle conceit. That one very difficult to break. A lot of them cling on to that one. So he said, if you still got a little bit of this, then you at least will realize anagami. Understand? Now, when you become anagami, you don't worry. You are a non-returner. You know what is a non-returner? You don't have to return to the sensual world. Don't have to return to the human realm or the, what they call the deva realm, to become arahant. You take birth in the pure abbot. You know where is the pure abbot? The form rhyme up there. The pure abbot, the life is very long. So certain cultivator, they do certain type of jhana. They want to stay there. So they take birth there. And from there, they become arahant. Or sometimes, if they have this, what they call bodhisattva vow, then they continue their perfection to be a Samasambuddha. That's why they will take the bodhisattva vow to become a bodhisattva. Then they have to renounce the arahantship. They can become arahant, that life, but they renounce. Because the moment you become Arahant and you don't renounce, actually you cease to be, you don't come back. No more rebirth for you, because you got no more ignorance. But for those who take the Bodhisattva vow, it's very different. You have to make this Bodhisattva vow, which is very strong and very powerful. And when you commit yourself to actually to save the limitless living being. That's why Bodhisattva has great compassion, because they vow to come for the living being. And they are willing to sacrifice, to actually sacrifice their life, many, many lives, eons and eons of cultivation, to come and develop this perfection so that they can be a Sammasambuddha or a fully enlightened one. So if they choose this path, then they have to actually bring forth the pure mind, another mind. They call it the supramundane mind. But this one, no evil root, no negativity. That's why they have to use love and compassion, understand? Out of love and compassion, they make it into a vow, understand? That's why they vow to come for the living being. And they make it into a vow means it enters the nature's law. So that's why when it enters the nature's law, they can have this karmic body, form and mind, coming back in the form of Bodhisattva to cultivate, to continuously develop this perfection of the 10 perfection to become a Sammasambuddha. These 10 perfection are very difficult to perfect and cultivate. So this is the one you need to have very strong understanding, very committed. That's why Bodhisattva are not easy to cultivate, Bodhisattvahood. To be a Bodhisattva, you must have a very, very big heart, full of love and compassion and wisdom to walk this way. That's why you must determine strongly. So, Anagami is actually one of the minimum you will realize if you cultivate this four foundation of mindfulness. Chances is you become Arahant.
Yeah. Why in the Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha never mentioned on the minimum practice to gain Sotapanna and Sakadagami?
No, you see.
He set Anagami
as a standard. Yes, I understand. Because you don't understand what the Buddha is trying to tell you. He's trying to tell you, if you cultivate his four foundation of mindfulness, by right, you should become an Arahant, understand? I already explained just now. If you don't become Arahant, it's because you have this minor conceit, which is very difficult for even a lot of cultivators. Because when you are already at that stage, there is still this very subtle mana, minor conceit. Conceit, you know? Like a little bit of proudness. It's not an ego anymore, understand? You like they got this minor conceit, the proud, a little bit of proud. I am now different. Normal people cannot be what I am, understand? So they hold on to a little bit of this minor conceit, and then they are stuck. They are at this pure abode. That's why they become anagami. So they will live there very long. But finally, that's why they are called a non-returner. You know what is a non-returner? You don't return to the sensual realm, but you return to the form realm. Understand? The pure effort. Whereas if you are a sotapan, maximum 7 life, means you come back to the sensual world maximum 7 times. If you are already a sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, they call it the once returner. You only return to here one more time. Understand? To the sensual realm. Then after that, you at least anagami or arahant, or you decide take the Bodhisattva way. So this sutta is telling you the four foundation of mindfulness will definitely make you an arahant, unless you have a little bit of this minor conceit, then you become anagami. Understand?
I was thinking set the goal lower.
No.
At least it's easier
nothing,
to achieve.
It's nothing to do with setting the goal lower, because to the Buddha, it is enlightenment, understand not? Enlightenment means no more ignorant, understand not? No more avijja. So no more ignorant means at least an arahant. That's why he said, this is the only way. Ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu. O bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, understand not? Because I can tell you, Sotapan, actually your wisdom is still not there yet. You still have what? Ill will and? No. Ignorant until arahant you still have. You see, sensual desire and ill will are the fourth and the fifth fetters. You still got sensual desire and ill will. Understand not? But your grasping is not strong already because you understand what anatta is. Sakkaya ditti you can break. Understand not? Then even after you become a sakkadagami, your sensual desire and ill will is only attenuated. Understand not? That's why to the Buddha, yeah, you are enlightened because after that maximum seven life, you actually can become enlightened. Or Sakadangami, maximum one more life in the sensual life, you become at least anagami or arahant. So to the Buddha, these two, he doesn't want to include under this Satipatthana. We have no meaning. These two, you can get it. Actually, compare to the other two, these two is relatively very easy. Understand? But I may say it's relatively very easy. Relatively, that word, you must underline. Because to the enlightened one is very easy. But to the deluded one is very, very difficult, I tell you. Even Sotapan is so difficult because that Sakkaya Ditti is very difficult to break, I tell you. A lot of people are caught thought-based meditation. Caught in the thought level. They cannot realize that true nature. They do not know what that true mind is. That's why Ananda, they are caught. You read the Surangama Sutta. You go and read. The Surangama Sutta, you know what happened, no? Ananda, he was only a Sotapanna. He cannot understand the true mind. Then the Buddha actually pitied him. He was asked, where is the true mind? Seven areas he searched, he cannot find. And every time he confused the mundane mind as the true mind. Because he keep on arguing with the Buddha. When I see the Buddha, what they call the minor characteristics and major characteristics. You remember the Buddha got 32 hallmarks, the major characteristic, and the 80 or 84 minor characteristics. Ananda said, it is with this mind that I see the Buddha with the hallmark. How can now you tell me this is not my true mind? That's why Ananda panicked, freak. Because he's only a Sotapan. He only understands that it's non-self, anatta. But he cannot understand this is not the true mind. That's why they still have sensual desire. You will, they can still grasp and cling to this five aggregate of form and mind. They can still be deluded by it. So that's why anagami and sotapan, actually, they are still a lot of fetters to break. Not until you break the first five fetters. At least the anagami would have broken through the first five fetters. Means no more sensual desire, no more you. That time your mind is different. Understand not? Because nothing, the senses cannot draw you and delude you anymore. They cannot get angry anymore. Understand not? But then they can still attach to form jhana, formless jhana, minor conceit. Sometimes their mind can still have restlessness. That's why the last five fetters are very difficult to break. And the Buddha understand. He said, if some form of clinging still exists, at least a sotapan, if you cultivate this four foundation of mindfulness. Understand? So it's not a matter of setting the bar lower. Understand? It's not like high jump. You start with the minimum. Then after that, you qualify, you put higher and higher. The Buddha said, the four foundation of mindfulness is so beautiful, it's the only way. If you cultivate it by right, you should hit the high bar, the arahant. But just in case there is some form of minor what they call clinging or grasping, minor conceit. At least anagami. That's why he don't say sotapan or sakadagami. Because these two actually, to him, you are still far away. You still got sensual desire and ill will. You still cannot handle a lot of things. You can still get angry with people. That's why you don't think the enlightened one, especially the sotapan and the sakadagami, you think they cannot get angry. They also like you can get angry. But they are not so deluded anymore. Understand? They still got sensual desire and ill will, but not so crude like yours. Understand? They actually has got no more sakaya ditti, self-delusion no more. So in that aspect, their understanding is quite okay. Means they won't believe you say die already, you become what? They know you lie. Because they know this one, die already. He know me, he know you. Not me, not you. Not a permanent unchanging entity, it just form a mind, gone. They know already. Yeah. But karma, they also know. So they thought they always come back. So that's why the teaching is very unique. When you understand, it's very beautiful. Okay? Sadhu. Okay, we go on. Okay, the third part, part three, on meditation. I will just read through it quickly. Do not just believe what has been spoken, but instead investigate into all the Dhamma or truth as advised by the Buddha. The Buddha advised the Kalamas, under the Kalama Sutta, do not believe anything, but investigate into them, because the truth stands up to investigation. Then here I put, you have to investigate, as advised by the Buddha via constant reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into all the Dhamma to fully understand the three turning of the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha. Once you have developed the three types of corresponding wisdom, you will know how to free yourself and later on share your understanding with others so that you too can be a blessing to all. So this is very important. You have to constantly reflect, contemplate, and inquire. So afterward, we will go through the Third Noble Truth. Just now, last Sunday, we stopped at this First and Second Noble Truth, the Second Turning. I told you all to go back and cultivate, try. Then after that, we together go through. Okay, then the last part is very important. As thought is respond to memory, so memory is thought-based. And it's of the past. You know what is thought, isn't it? Respond to memory. What is memory? Whatever you remember. That's why it's of the past. Understand now? And it's always thought-based. Hence, when you cultivate based on memory, which is thought-based or knowledge-based, you cannot possibly realize a state that is beyond thought and beyond time. With knowledge, which is not wisdom, you tend to be rigid with your views. So you tend to use words, interpret them according to your views and opinion. Then you have the tendency to argue with people and perceive things as right and wrong. Means you have duality. So this one summarizes what you need to fully understand finally. Your thought. You have to go beyond thought. Okay, the four right effort, this one I have spoken before. I summarize it one more time. But the four right effort within the Noble Eightfold Path. The first right effort is to abandon the unwholesome action, speech, and thought that has arisen. Then the second right effort is to prevent the arising of the yet to arisen unwholesome action, speech, and thought. This needs constant heedfulness or mindfulness. If without mindfulness, you cannot see your mental intention, and you cannot arise the right effort to prevent the arising of the unarisen, unwholesome thought. The third right effort is to arise the right effort to cultivate the appropriate right action, speech, and thought regularly. And finally, the last one is, the fourth right effort is to continuously arise the right effort to refine upon the wholesomeness that is already in you until they become perfection. as again just to maintain the wholesomeness as stated it most texts. Most of the texts they just say maintain. So I don't think the Buddha will mean that. It is more to refine upon, then from there you develop the perfection of it. Okay, now we continue. The meaning of the sutta, page 16, from here. Okay, this sutra has both a generic and a specific title. The generic title is simply sutra, while the specific title distinguishes one sutta from another. So the heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta is the specific title of this sutta. Prajnaparamita is the Dhamma. Heart is the analogy. Sutra is the sutra. The heart of Prajnaparamita is the heart within the heart. No other sutra in the Prajna division has this name. I have already explained the specific title, the heart of Prajnaparamita, by the 8-line verse. This is by Xuan Hua. Now the word sutta will be fully explained. What is a sutta? Normally, under Theravada, what do you define? Sutta means what? Discourse of the Buddha. Everything that the Buddha spoke on, the teaching, they call it the sutta. That's why you have the Tipitaka, the second baskets, the sutta division, or they call it the Suttanta. So this is the basket on the discourse of the Buddha. A sutta is defined as path, the path necessarily passed through in cultivation of the world, the way. If you wish to cultivate, you must move along that path. If you don't want to cultivate, following it is unnecessary. But if you do want to cultivate, sutta is the path you must take. Now, if people don't walk on the path, it becomes wild and overgrown with vegetation. For example, you may have been able to recite the heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta without referring to the text. But then 4 or 5 months pass without your reciting it, and you forget it. That forgetting is the path becoming overgrown. However, if you walk the path, if you cultivate the way, then it won't become overgrown. But every day will become smoother and brighter. What is the benefit of reciting sutta? This one is for the Pure Land, Mahayana. They actually emphasize a lot of chanting, or sutta recitation. They call it song jing, understand? They all got very unique way, song jing. They actually offered the sutta. Reciting suttas doesn't yield any benefits. You waste a lot of time and use a lot of energy to recite a sutta. For instance, what is gained by reciting the heart sutta in front of the Dhamma? You read it from beginning to the end, waste energy, spirit and time, but don't see any return from it. Cultivator, don't be stupid. The benefit which you can see are not real. All appearances are empty and false. To grasp at form, at what you can see, is not a benefit. That is why reciting sutta isn't beneficial. You know why? Here explained to you. Because you cannot understand. You want to see immediate tangible benefit. Understand? If I recite, then I can cure my disease, I believe. This is what human beings want in here. They say, got a problem? Chant the sutta. Protect you. That's why Jethwa said, if you do that, you can never understand the true benefit of reciting the sutta. Because the understanding is different. Human beings cling on to form, understand not? That's why he said, the benefit which you can see are not real. All appearances are empty and false. To grasp at form. Human beings like to grasp at form. At what you can see is not a benefit. That is why reciting sutta isn't beneficial. That's why you don't understand. So when you grasp at this form, external form, what happened? What happened? Huh? We went through last time. What happened? Is this you? That's why the English also got a saying, quite common. Huh? But this one is not deep at all. Do not judge a person by what? Huh? By what he wears. So what he wear is what he put over the form. Understand? But worse is, you attach to this form. And this is even more deluded, isn't it? So what is form? What is form? Huh? Is this you? If this is not you, why you grasp onto it? Because when you grasp onto it and hold on to it, you differentiate according to this, understand? You go and define people by what you see with their form. You say this guy is a Chinese, Indian, Malay, Muslim, because you identify through external form. Then you say middle age, old man, young boy, male and female. All this is what? Your mind discrimination. How you discriminate? Because you identify through the form. You do not understand that human being, their form come about through what? Through what? You just study last 2 weeks. How does you receive this form? Perception is through the mind, but what I mean is, how does this shape and form, this form, like I am what I am, how does it come about? Through my what? Your karma is there, retributive karma is there, primary and secondary is there. Why you want to cling to that? This is not me, this is not you, but the primary and secondary retributive karma is the one that conditioned this form. That's why this is a karmically conditioned form. It's not me, understand? So you cling on to this, that's why you call me Chinese, understand? Brother Teo, man, middle age, Buddhist. Then of course, you look at it, handsome, not handsome, ugly, and all those things. So all this is form discrimination, understand? Discriminated by who? By your thought, your views, your opinion of things, understand? I am not this form. Why do you hold on to it? So if you see beyond form, is what? Reality is not this form. I am neither male or female, understand? Chinese or Malay. So no more division, is there? You are more at peace, is there? We are more close, is there, to each other, is there? We are all humanity, understand? Because we don't identify anymore, understand? Then you say, you have a mind, I have a mind. You no more male, no more female, I no more male, no more female, so we don't argue on gender, understand? And then you still have your views, your opinion. I still have my views and my opinion. Then you realize the mind still different, understand? Your mind, my mind, and their mind are still different. And then you tell yourself, if I can see beyond the mind, what do I see? Then you see the true nature, the Buddha nature. And then everyone is the same. Understand? That's why the oneness. When you have this understanding, you don't discriminate anymore. Then you come to understand we are all one. Oneness, one big family. When you hurt somebody, you hurt yourself. Understand? Because the oneness is all connected. Understand? That's why when you destroy Mother Nature, you destroy yourself. Understand? When you pollute Mother Nature, you pollute yourself. Understand? You are one with it. Do not be foolish. Understand? This form and mind is different. Understand? With wisdom, this form and mind need not suffer. But that nature is the oneness nature. Those deluded and ignorant ones do all these deluded and ignorant things, they will create problem for the whole of this universe. And this entire universe together with the nature is one, understand? That's why it's always eternally moving as one. That's why when you hurt somebody, you hurt yourself. When you harm nature, you harm yourself. That's why there must be love. Understand? Then you become one. Then there is perfect harmony. Then there is peace. Then there is joy. Then there is meaning to life. Then everything becomes wholesome. Yeah. Everything is in great harmony. That's why the great harmony of nature, of life. Yeah. Everything will flow in accordance. If we become too bad, what happens? Nature take over. Heal itself. You know how nature heals itself? Our planet has healed itself many, many times. Maybe many, many billions of times. You know how it heals itself? Huh? Every time you pollute the planet, when it becomes too bad, nature's disasters start happening. Then what happens? Then? That's why they say 2012. Every 20 over to 30,000 years, the planet goes through one of this. That's why it gets destroyed. Then when it gets destroyed, living beings get wiped out. Wiped out. Especially last time, the dinosaur. Then after that, the human being. Then many, many times, the human being. So because of that, when no more human consciousness that are negative, nature heal itself. Understand? That's why you go through the what they call the ice age. Then nature heal itself, recover. And then life start again. That's why 5,000 over years ago we start this civilization. We start again. Then we reach this point. If 2012 we pass, we have another 20 to 30,000 years of beautiful civilization. That's why you will have what they call heaven on earth. Yeah? The golden age of our planet. Never before. Seldom you have this. So when you can be a part of this civilization, you count your blessing. Yeah. Actually, there are a lot of beings who want to come. They cannot come. They used to use this word, the chosen one. Karma choose, not you choose. You must have that nature. So this is the part that you need to understand. Do not cling to this form. Okay? We move on. Don't search for benefit. Recite the sutta once and your own nature is clean once. This is very beautiful. Don't search for benefit. Understand? You just have faith. Understand? Recite the sutta. Then your mind will be actually purified. But every time when you are sincere, when you recite without the greed to have benefit, understand? To see the merits, the sutta become very powerful. But every time you want to be like the king, the emperor, that asks Bodhidharma, how much merit you think I have after I have done all this? Bodhidharma says zero. Nothing. So that's why when you understand, you don't cling. Do not search for benefit. Recite the sutta once and once. And your nature is clean once. When you recite the heart sutta once, you have the feeling that you understand a little of its meaning. Recite it twice or thrice. And each time you understand a little more. Reciting sutta helps the wisdom of your own true nature to grow. Understand? However much. He asked how much. You can't see it. Nevertheless, you can have a kind of feeling about it. Therefore, it is possible to talk about the benefits of reciting sutta. Moreover, each time you recite the sutta, your affliction decreases. You shouldn't get upset during recitation by thinking, you over there, you recite it wrong. See? He teaches you not to argue, understand? Not to condemn, not to judge, not to react. You recite it too fast. I can't keep up with you. The sound that you make when you recite are really unpleasant. So I don't like to listen to it. No, don't waste your effort in those directions. When reciting sutta or mantra, everyone should chant together. it isn't necessary for everyone to know the language. The sutta is recited, it's been recited in. But able to read the sutta or not, everyone should recite along together. For everyone to practice together, though, don't mean you're looking for my fault and my looking for your fault. If there are really fault, everyone should find them. And if you yourself don't find your own fault because they are too big, then your cultivation will not be attuned to receive a response. Nature is very fair. If you are not sincere, there is no response. So reciting sutta is a great help to one's own nature, your Buddha nature, in developing wisdom. Reciting the Diamond Sutta develops wisdom. Reciting the Heart Sutta develops even more wisdom. You say that there aren't any benefit gained from reciting sutta. Yet the benefits are very great. It's just that you don't see them. You don't see them. Then they are real benefits. Anything that you can see, it just means skin level, outwardly. The word sutta has four other meanings. That which strings together, that which attracts, that which is permanent, and a method. String together refers to the connecting of all the meaning which were spoken to make a sutta. As if a piece of thread is used to string them together. So a sutta attracts in that it can make use of opportunities for the transformation of sentient being. This particular sutta is capable of responding to the causal opportunity of all sentient beings, and of giving each a medicine to cure that being's own particular disease. Just as a strong magnet can attract iron from a great distance, a sutta is like a magnet, draw in all the sentient beings. We sentient beings are like iron, hard and stubborn, with large temple and many faults. But as soon as we are pulled into the magnet, we begin to slowly soften, so that our fault fall away. That is the meaning of that which attracts. This one is their analogy, not so important. A sutta is permanent because it is eternally unchanging, Dhamma, and it has neither beginning nor end. No one word can be omitted from or added to the sutta. Thus it is eternal. In ancient time and in the present, living beings have cultivated and will continue to cultivate according to the sutta. A sutta is a method followed in cultivation of the way. In the three periods of time, past, present and future, one cultivates according to this Dhamma. What is honored in the three periods of time alike is called the method. What is unchanging in the past and present is called the permanent. Sutta also has the meaning of marking line. In ancient China, carpenter used a tool called ink cup and line. It consists of string which are ink black. When carpenter want to be sure that their construction are straight and true, they would stretch the string out, pull it back and snap it onto it, in order to make a straight line, a straight black guideline. To sum up, a sutta is a set of rules. To recite sutta is to follow the rules. If you don't recite sutta, then you don't follow the rules. Since you are now studying prajna, you certainly should respect the rules of prajna. If you do, you will certainly develop your wisdom. I have spoken in general about the title of the sutta, and now I will talk about the translator. For everything we understand of this sutta, we should give great thanks to the translator. If he had never existed, we would be unable to see the sutta or even to hear it. Hear its name. If that were the case, how would we be able to cultivate according to the method prescribed in it? It would be impossible to find its path of cultivation. Therefore, we should thank the person who translated the sutta. Since from that time up to the present moment, every generation can benefit, has benefited from this compassionate teaching and transforming, it follows that the merit derived from translating sutta is inconceivably great. So this part, not so important, huh? The meaning of the sutta, huh? We can just finish it. Huh? Then we keep the next chapter, the translator. Huh? This one we will do it next week. Huh? Oh, sorry, the week after. Next week is Vesak. Huh? We are close. Oh, okay, we still got 10 minutes. Huh? Okay, you got any question or not? Huh? Do you have any question? Anybody got any question? Huh? Otherwise, you can take a 5-minute break. Then after that, we come and we continue with the second session. Huh? Today, the second session should be more interesting. Huh? I will do the second turning of the third and fourth noble truth with you. Huh? Okay, yeah. Noble truth with you. Huh? Okay, yeah. Okay, since everybody is here before, I think we can start the meditation straight away. Just relax your body and mind. Make sure you are relaxed. The body and mind must relax. That is the most important. Relax means not holding on to anything. Whatever problem you have, you tell the thought, tell the mind. After the meditation, you deal with it. For the time being, you just want to have the space to train your mind to develop the meditation. Then after that, you silence your mind. For those who already know how to meditate, you can proceed. For those who are still new, if you want to train your mind, you can use the skillful means, mind sweeping methods, followed by metta. Then after that, you sweep your mind from the forehead down to your buttock, then reverse the whole thing. Then when your mind is already more or less trained, then you try to anchor it to whatever object of meditation that are suitable for you. You use it. That is only an initial skill for me to train your mind. After your mind is trained, then you don't need to use it anymore. You can just silence your mind. Then develop the awareness of what is happening to your form and mind. How your mind actually stir, how it move, how it condition you into the various activity, how you are affected by what your senses create for you through contact with your mind. Then you come to realize how heavy your conditioning is, how strong your habitual tendency is, how strong are your views and opinion of things, and how it can stir your mind and cause you all the delusion, the grasping, the clinging, and cause all your suffering and misery. You will start to see all this. Then you understand so beautifully how the Buddha actually explained his teaching. The Four Noble Truths, they will appear within your own form and mind. You will start to see it arising. You will start to see how you get yourself entangled and how suffering come to be. Then you know the cause behind and you know how to free later on. Then you start to see how your mind function, the dependent origination. No more in theory, actually happening inside your own form and mind. Then you start to see the hindrance of mind. Then you start to understand what the Buddha meant by the Dhammanupassana, where he talked about mindfulness of the five hindrances of mind, the five aggregate, the seven factors of enlightenment, the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases, all this, it will become clear to you. Then finally, how you awaken to the Four Noble Truths. All this you will be able to understand. Just develop this heedfulness or silent mind. Then after that you silent yourself. Just feel. Don't think. Then whatever that arises through your sense door activity, learn to understand them. Silent your mind just to observe. Do not react. Do not try to know. Do not try to understand. Just follow it closely. Like when you want to understand somebody, you silent yourself, patiently listen. Try to understand what is going on. Then the truth will actually show up. Then when you see all this reality, the truth, the characteristics of nature, the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching that the Buddha has taught you starts to become meaningful. Then there's a lot of joy. Then there's a lot of understanding. That's how wisdom come to be. You will start to realize a lot of things. You will start to see things very clearly. Without thought, there is clarity. The silent mind is so different from the conditioned mind, from the thinking mind, the habitual mind, the mind that has a lot of restlessness, worry, anxiety, that has a lot of hindrance. The mind without the hindrance is so beautiful, so different. Okay, now I will let you meditate. Then in about maybe 15 to 20 minutes time, I will ring the bell. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Okay, today we shall continue on the second turning of the Four Noble Truths. I think last Sunday we stopped at this second Noble Truth, second turning of the second Noble Truth. You now turn to page 7 of the notes. There's another book, Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha. Turn to page 7 on the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. So now we go through. There's a table at the bottom there. The second turning is very unique and important because under this second turning of the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha put four different emphases for all the Four Noble Truths as follows. So the first Noble Truth, the second turning, the Buddha proclaimed. Then after that, he proclaimed the second turning. The Buddha said, this Noble Truth of Dukkha is to be understood. So this is the message from the Buddha. We make use of it to develop the second turning wisdom. So this one we have gone through. We have discussed how can we develop the contemplative wisdom, the inquiry and the reflection on what the Buddha said, and how it can lead to wisdom. Called Chintamaya Panya, the second type of wisdom. So our inquiry starts from why did the Buddha say this, understand or not? Then through the inquiry, we understand why. Then from why, we move on. How can I understand what the Buddha said? So from why did he say this, then we get the answer. Then we move on the next one. How can we understand? Then from there, it continues to probe. So likewise, the second Noble Truth is the same. The second Noble Truth, the Buddha, under the second turning, he said, this Noble Truth of craving, this Noble Truth of the cause of arising of suffering or dukkha, which is craving, is to be abandoned. So we did the same, second turning wisdom. We reflect, contemplate, and inquire deep into this second turning. Then we ask, why did the Buddha say this? What is the meaning? Why did the Buddha say this? That this Noble Truth of the cause arising of suffering, which is craving, is to be abandoned. Why? You cannot remember. Why? then that is the cause. Means you continue to have suffering, understand now? So like what A.B. has explained is very good. When I inquire why did the Buddha say this, means I reflect. Oh, no wonder, means the Buddha knew I have not abandoned it yet, understand now? So he said, this cause of arising of suffering, which is craving born of my delusion, is to be abandoned. Because the moment I cannot abandon this, I will continue to experience the cause. I will continue to suffer. Understand not? So that's why now, through the inquiry, now you know why the Buddha said this. So after you know why the Buddha said this, you know you have to abandon this so that there is no suffering. What is your next question? What is your next inquiry? How can I do it? Isn't it? How can I abandon it? Then you reflect, you contemplate. Because from the first Noble Truth, the second turning, you already know what suffering is there. Because the Buddha asked, under the second turning, this Noble Truth of Dukkha is to be understood. Means what? Why did the Buddha ask this? Means I have yet to understand what suffering is. That's why I have to reflect, contemplate, and understand. So after I understand, I move on. How can I truly understand what suffering is? Then the deeper understanding will come about. Then when you know what suffering is, when you have true, truly understood what suffering is and the cause behind, then you know how to attend to it. You know how to retrospectively reverse it, understand that? Where you know this is the cause, so you put to practice, you investigate into it. When the Buddha said, if I attach and cling to my delusion, there is a craving behind. Is there a craving? Let's take for example the first noble truth, okay? Birth, old age, sickness and death, okay? Birth, old age, sickness and death, all these four we take. Okay, what is the cause? How do you become afflicted? Yeah, we already gone through the first noble truth is there. The first noble truth, we have understood what suffering is there, like birth. When there is complication, the process of birth and all those things. And when this one, the body grow old, yeah? The senses fail us and all those things. What actually happened? Yeah? How did all this afflict you? Yeah? Why you become affected? Let's say your baby born. Yeah? Then you go through the birth process. Yeah? How did it cause you suffering? Or when you get old? Yeah? Yeah, so let's say healthy, everything very good. Is there any suffering? Huh? As long as you don't have a situation, you don't feel it there. But the trouble is, you have attachment to this baby, isn't it? You think it's your baby, isn't it? Correct, lah? When you say it's your baby, means what? Is it the truth? You may think you know the Dhamma is not the truth, but to the scientist, it's very true, it's my baby. Understand? I gave birth to this baby, born from my womb. Why you say not my baby? Understand? Means materialistically, conventionally, based on scientific understanding, yes, it's your baby. But based on spiritual understanding, it's another form of mind, karmically conditioned. How understand? Not really you or yours, because this very form of mind you cannot own. How can you own that one? So that wisdom is another one. But when it comes to mother, child, there is attachment, understand? But through wisdom, if you have the Dhamma, you need not attach. That's why you don't suffer, understand? But normal people, they don't have this wisdom. They will attach. How can you say it's not my baby? My own blood and flesh. I gave birth to them with my husband or my boyfriend, understand or not? Then they will sure have this attachment. How does attachment come to be? Because your thought tell you what? I gave birth to this child, my child, understand or not? I have a duty, a responsibility, and I am the mother, understand or not? So you develop what? Attachment towards this baby. So how can it afflict you? The cause of suffering is attachment. So we have to reflect and contemplate and put to test what the Buddha said. The cause of arising of suffering is my craving, my attachment, my clinging, born of what? My delusion. Because I cannot see it. The Dhamma is not there. That's why I believe what the scientists say, which is very common for normal people. Then the moment I attach, means what? I worry about it getting sick, correct? Getting old and one day die. I worry about it having problem, understand? Make mistake and all those things. So that's why the moment I have this worry, fear and anxiety, I have attachment, understand? That's why your mind can be afflicted, understand? When the baby is sick, injured, having complication, understand? Because of the attachment. And then you realize, this is the truth. This is basically what happened to human being. Yeah. So, after you have already attended to the first inquiry, why did the Buddha say this? Means, I don't have the wisdom. I do not see the attachment. That's why I need to reflect and contemplate. And now I see, understand? Because my baby, I can really have this
clinging, grasping, attachment, because I believe it's mine. After I have known that this is the cause of arising of suffering, my craving, born of my delusion. And what did the Buddha say? You have to abandon it, is it? This is the second turning, is it? So how can you abandon it? Ah, the second inquiry was, how can I abandon it? Understand? Ah, now you tell me, how can you abandon it? This attachment, this craving, this clinging, that can be a potential cause of your suffering. Because if you don't have the wisdom, when you attach and cling, suffering will arise when you confront this reality of the First Noble Truth. Means when the baby go through sickness, death, suffering, injury, and all those things. So now you tell me, how can you abandon it? You reflect, you contemplate. How can you abandon it? How? We discuss it. Yeah. Yeah, the four right effort is one of the way. You have to arise the four right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought, the wrong thought, and all those things. But then, after you do that, will it bring about understanding and wisdom for you not to attach? You cannot just say, I don't want to think about it, understand? I want to abandon this thought, it's wrong thought, it conditions my suffering, my fear, my... But then you need what? You need wisdom, isn't it? You need understanding to abandon it, isn't it? That's why the second turning is very powerful. First you inquire, why did the Buddha say, I have to abandon? So now I know, if I don't abandon, I suffer, I got this attachment, this craving. The second inquiry, how can I do it? How can I abandon it? It's not just through right effort to abandon, that I abandon. Understand? Abandoning this, if it's a normal, what they call wrong thought, very easy. Eh? You abandon, you think of the wholesome thought, you don't suffer anymore. But this one is your attachment to your own baby, understand or not? You cannot don't want to think, understand or not? It's your baby, understand or not? This one you need wisdom to free, understand or not? That's why the four right effort can only be applied and used for unwholesome thought that deal with normal situation, understand or not? Like your anger, your hatred, your delusion, understand or not? But when it comes to attachment, the Buddha never say use the four right effort to abandon. What did the Buddha say? Trace the origination factor, understand or not? You trace. How does attachment come to be? How do you become deluded and cling? Huh? When you trace the origination factor, when you come to understand how it comes, then you know how to reverse it. How does it trick you into this sakkaya ditti, this craving, this attachment? How? Huh? You believe your thought, isn't it? Correct or not? What did your thought say? Because you keep on thinking, isn't it? My child, I gave birth, biologically, scientifically, everything points towards my child. I got a birth cert, my name there. My child's name there. So all this is what society is telling you, understand? But when you meditate, when you go deep into it, you reflect and contemplate, like what the Buddha said. What did the Buddha say about this form and this mind? Huh? This body is not you, is it? It's condition arising, is it? Cause of phenomena, is it? Element on it, is it? This is where I start, understand not? The five daily contemplation. I'm of the nature to get old, get sick and die. Where this is only form, not me, understand not? So when I have this understanding, I don't cling, I don't grasp, I don't suffer, understand not? So you reflect and you contemplate every day. This body of mine, which will include your children, understand not? It's of the nature to grow old, to get sick and die, for he has not gone beyond disease, old age and sickness. So when I know that this is the reality, that everyone has to go through, each and everyone has to go through. That when I have the wisdom to accept this reality, that is the beginning of first wisdom. Then I will not be affected so badly, understand not? Which means I can accept this reality, because everybody that has a human body or form, they are subject to old age, sickness and death. So when the time comes, I have to accept this reality. When I accept, I don't attach. Understand not? I don't cling. Means I am at peace. Understand not? How does attachment and clinging comes about? When you do not accept the reality of the moment. Understand not? Understand not? Because you want it your way. My children must not die. Other people's children can die. That's how the mind attach and cling. So when you understand it's a reality of life and existence, the daily contemplation that the Buddha teach, you straight away understand, hey, really? The Buddha said so correctly. Each and every one of us has to go through this reality of life and existence. The reality about this form, understand not? Everyone that has a human form is subject to old age, sickness and death. Understand not? Nobody is free from it. You are not alone in this. So when you understand this, then you realize, if this is the reality, why don't I develop the wisdom now before it happens, so that when it happens, I don't have to suffer. Then I accept. This is the law of nature. Understand not? This is the way the form goes. It goes the way of nature. It's of the nature to get old, to get sick and one day die. For it has not gone beyond. So when I have this understanding and wisdom, if I can accept, then I don't have to suffer. Then like what the Buddha said, whatever is of the nature to arise, is of the nature to cease. What has been born or arisen has already ceased. So finish, understand not? That's why the Buddha is very wise. He said, no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. Understand not? That's why don't go and worry about life. Don't go and attach and cling and become miserable. Understand not? Understand the reality and accept this reality. When you come to terms with the reality of this world, this body, everything becomes simple. Understand not? Don't always use the thought, an idea. If I have not taken my child there, if I have taken care when I give birth, I would not have this suffering. All the if is your idea, what your thought tell you, not the truth, not the reality. Understand or not? That's why you blame people also same. Why did that guy did that? You have not done that. All these things will not have happened. Again, it's not a reality. Then you get angry over what your thought tell you. You see? The power of thought. Delusion. Because you can never see the reality. The true nature of things. You want things your way, which is not nature's way. Everything follow nature's law on the soul. The law that governs life and existence. They are universal law. Pancha niyamas. Nobody can change that. Even God is subject to this law. Understand not? God is not free from this law. Because God is nature. Understand not? Mighty nature. Mighty nature got its own law. That's why God is subject to the same law. So the law of nature is the one that actually decides. Not God decides. Understand not? So when you understand everything that arise, there are causes and conditions behind it because it follows nature's law. You only need to have this wisdom. You accept the reality of it. You don't have to suffer. Of course, those who have meditated deep into it, then like the Buddha said under Dhammapada verse, I think 60-something, he said, my son, my wealth, this only the fools lament. That's why you can reflect and contemplate. Why did the Buddha say this? For that very body doesn't belong to him. Wherein son, wherein wealth, wherein belong. When you wake up to that reality, then you realize this form of mind is not me. Understand? There's another nature within. The Buddha nature, the eternal nature. which I have yet to realize it, yet to touch it. When I touch and realize that, then I realize this is only my karmic body for my mind, karmically conditioned out from me to you. Then I am no longer deluded, understand? When this form is not me, how can my children's body and mind be what they are? That's why there is no more delusion. Then your mind is free. That's why you don't worry about this form getting old, getting sick and die anymore. You use it to live. It's like a vehicle, understand not? Karmically conditioned out for you to use. Use it wisely. Use the thought wisely. That's why use it to arise the right thought. Not all the wrong thought. The deluded thought. Understand not? This is how you develop your contemplative wisdom. This is how I developed my contemplative wisdom during the early days. 34 years ago. I reflect, I contemplate. Then I understood what the Buddha said. Then I meditate. Then when I awaken to this truth, it becomes so beautiful. Everything becomes so clear. Then there is so much joy, so much happiness within. Then the love, the compassion starts to fall out. Then it understands how living beings suffer. That's why you have a lot of compassion for living beings. It is because of delusion that they suffer, nothing else. Without delusion, without ignorance, they won't be what they are. And every living being that has the Dhamma, knows the truth, will never do that. Understand? They will never hurt themselves, harm themselves, and torture themselves. Understand? They will always choose to be happy. Nobody is so stupid in this world, I tell you. But the reason being, they are always deluded. That's why they cannot make that choice. Understand? Ignorance is so strong. That's why they cannot see the truth, the reality. They always see the opposite of truth. They use their thought, their idea, their views and their opinion, which are all clouded, wrong view. So when you have this understanding, the Dhamma becomes very clear. So this part can understand. So the wisdom from the second turning or the second noble truth is very important. There are two parts. One is the reality of life and existence, the reality of form. The second one is the wisdom, spiritual. When you meditate and see the five aggregate through the heart sutta, 照见无蕴皆空. When you illuminate the five aggregate, you realize they are all empty, impermanent, non-self, suffering state. Because they come and they go, they arise and they pass away. You cannot grasp and you cannot cling, and they are not what you are. Whatever that arises and pass away cannot be you, understand? They are all condition arising, causal phenomena, byproduct of your true nature. That's why this is not your true mind. This is your mundane mind. This is your fake mind, understand? 假象. So when you are deluded, you are caught. When you have wisdom, you are free. And this is very important. Okay, now today we do the third one. The third noble truth. Today I am not going to say anything. I'm not going to give you the answer. You tell me the answer. The third noble truth. We get Engbi to read the second turning, third number two. What did the Buddha proclaim?
The Buddha proclaimed this cessation of dukkha is to be realized.
Okay. How do you go about developing the contemplative wisdom, the second turning wisdom? First inquiry is what?
Why did the Buddha?
Why did the Buddha say this? Under the second turning, the proclamation. Why did the Buddha say this cessation of dukkha is to be realized? Why? If you don't realize this cessation, what happens?
Then there is no cessation of dukkha.
There is no cessation of form and mind. Means no enlightenment. Understand or not? That's why it's important that I realize this. Knowing it is not enough. Understand or not? Understanding it is not enough. Abandoning the craving is not enough. Understand not? I have to realize this cessation. That's why the Buddha say very specifically, this third noble truth that talks about the cessation of dukkha, is to be realized. Means the Buddha already explained under the third noble truth. Suffering need not be. Suffering can end. Cessation of dukkha in the here and the now. Nibbana can be realized in the here and the now. And this is to be realized. Not only talked about. Not only understood. Not as a knowledge, understand of. Because when you realize that, then you realize enlightenment. You realize Nibbana. Understand not? So what is your next inquiry? Yeah? How can I realize this cessation? Yeah. So what did the Buddha teach you? Yeah? Noble Eightfold Path. Then you zero in on what? Yeah? And be asked that question. Last Sunday you asked that question. How come it only takes 7 years and minimum 7 days? Zero in on the four foundation of mindfulness, understand? Huh? When you zero in on the four foundation of mindfulness, this is the wisdom perfecter. This is the purification of mind, understand? Huh? Then you come to realize what the Buddha said. Hey, it's so beautiful. Maximum 7 years. I sure realize this, understand not? So what's the problem? The problem is you never want to start. Understand not? You never take it seriously. You think it's a joke, you think a lot of time, 7 years. I think I can live average 75, I still got a long time to go. I tell you, nobody know what is the next moment. Understand not? Anything can happen. Do not be complacent. And the four foundation of mindfulness, if you were to cultivate it very fast, I tell you. Actually, when I did it, 2 weeks it came to me. Only 2 weeks, doesn't need that long. And 2 weeks, my mind, totally different. Within that 2 weeks, the daily mindfulness came. Then the Satipatthana just happened. Then everything is understood very fast. Then the cessation also happened. Everything also happened. That's why it's not so long. That's why I say 7 years is very long. Very long. Long enough for most people. Understand that? So the four foundations of mindfulness, you must go back and read. Read the Satipatthana Sutta and try to understand it. Because the meaning is very deep. What I have shared with you is only the surface, very little. I haven't gone into the detail yet. Because there is no condition for all these things. When there is condition, means when you all are serious, when you all move into it, then you got question. During that time, the condition will arise. When your question come, I will know you are there already. You are at that point where you need to understand in more detail this part. Then I can explain, understand or not? It's just like last time, all this I cannot teach you, I cannot share with you. Because it's like something very difficult for you to accept and understand. Yeah. And luckily we should thank Sister Lee for giving us this condition to have this Heart Sutta and the meditation. Because here I have more time to talk and to explain. Otherwise at Sui An there, within 2 hours, I got to explain the meditation, I got to allow you to meditate, then I got to give you Q&A. I got not much time for Dhamma, understand? That's why this morning, the five spiritual faculty and the five hindrance, I got 1 hour plus. Oh, very good, very detailed. You go and listen to the recording, it's so beautiful. Because I got more time, I can explain. And there are so many things. There was one, I think, one of your Dhamma friend, I forgot his name, quite an elderly person. He was helping out in the kitchen. After we finished, Brother Sui An called me, he said, "You free or not?" He said, "You want to go?" I said, "What is it?" He said, "One of the kitchen people prepare some food." Actually, I was full. I said, "Never mind." Then later I said, okay, because they are so sincere, they want to offer. So I said, I will eat a little. So I joined them, I sat down, I ate a little. And then this guy came. He said, "Brother, what is it?" I never knew the five hindrance got so many things to talk about. He said, I never knew the five spiritual faculty got so many things I never heard before. I thought I already understood what this is. See? Because it's so differently explained. And when I explain this, they realize how heedless they are. How throughout the day they got this hindrance of mind that hinders them from entering the meditative state of peace. That's why they are never peaceful, never happy. They always have problems. Then they see the importance of the spiritual faculty now. So all this, when you go deep into it, the meaning stand out very clearly, very, very clearly. So we need to actually go deep into all this, spend more time. You are very lucky because we have this recording. If you miss, you can listen. Those who cannot attend also, they can listen. During the early day, they are not so fortunate. Last time when I spoke, you know what they did? They record on a tape. And this tape, they got a problem. That machine is a very old machine. It's a very big machine, karaoke machine. When they record, you know what happened? The motor slowed down. So the 1.5 hour tape, supposed to record 1.5 hour, then you change tape. Record the whole 2 hour talk, still got balance. Means what? The recording is so slow, when you play, it become very fast. So my word like bullet like that. They cannot hear a single thing. So what happened was somebody, somehow very smart, he managed to buy one that can slow down the speed. The motor can slow down. So he ran it on that one and record over a new one. Then he used the slow down one to listen. Then they transcribe it out. That's how you get your notes. Actually, that time I spoke so many. They have so much of this cassette. No, because cassette has certain tendency to easily damage. Because cassette technology is no good. Understand? You play a few times, it's like if you store it in a humid place, worse. The tape becomes funny. Then your reader also become funny. Then sometimes you cannot hear. So that is the problem with cassette. But now, MP3, USB, so clear. Now no distortion on. The CD, everything. CD sometimes can get scratched and all those things. But the USB, the iPod and the MP3, it come out so clear. So clear. Especially the memory stick you record. Nowadays they got this small recorder, very cheap, $30, $40. That day I bought one, I think $55. You can actually put in that they call it memory stick. Not thumb drive, this one is a very small chip. They got this old song, Teng Li Jun, which I cannot find any. Wow, that small fellow, 200 song. And it's so cheap. It comes with that memory stick. It comes with that memory stick, I think. With the whole thing. Only $55 of money. I think you can get it cheaper too. Because I didn't really bargain much with him. I pity him. I say better than become drug addict or snatch thief. So I buy from that person. So all this is, you can actually listen to it. So nowadays, technology has helped a lot. So when you have time, devote to the Dhamma. It can actually bring forth understanding. You remember what Master Sun Hao said? Every time you recite the sutta sincerely, it clear up a bit. Your nature brighten a bit. That is how you purify. Because when you have faith, their vow, everything help you. That's why the Buddha don't use this faith. He used aspiration to help you. He advised you to avoid all evil, do good. Then make aspiration. Because purifying the mind is very difficult. So you make aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamina. This one can take you along faster. That's why you must have the very strong mind, sincere mind, with a lot of faith, determined strongly that this is what you want. And it will come. The causes and conditions will come. Something will happen. Your mind will move. That's why you don't underestimate the power of aspiration, power of mind, power of faith, sadha and virya. So when you make that very strong aspiration, the early years when I cultivate, I tell you, I make determination very strongly. I adhitan very strongly. That's why everything come through. Everything just happened. And that one taught to me by the Thai monk, Ajayantra. He very good. He said, we choose, make aspiration, he always said. Adhitan, adhitan. Then I realized that Buddha also did a lot of this. He teach Angulimala the same. By the power of this truth, may this baby be born naturally, peacefully. Came out. So you must know how to use the power of truth, the power of aspiration. The nature's law are there to cater for all this. So if you have this understanding, it can make a big difference to your life. And you can be a blessing to many. You can help many people too. Okay? So now we continue. Okay. How can we realize that cessation? Now you understand, Miss, you have to do what? Just now I already explained to you. What must you do? What must you do? Cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path with particular emphasis on the four foundations of mindfulness. Understand now? That's why go into it. Then the Buddha already given you the assurance, maximum 7 years. No need so long. If you are lucky, 7 days. Can be done. That's what Moggallana did it. 7 days. Sariputta did it in 2 weeks. 14 days. He became Arahant. So when you develop that understanding, or you make aspiration, that's why you avoid evil, do good, do a lot of wholesomeness, keep your precept bound, pay respect, develop all the sincerity of cultivation, your faith, your virya, your sati, samadhi, and panya, the spiritual faculty, the enlightenment factor, then you make aspiration, and you seriously cultivate. It will come when you do it continuously. Last time when I was doing my cultivation, I tell you, throughout the day, non-stop. Never a moment I was apart from Dhamma. I constantly reflect, contemplate and cultivate the daily mindfulness. Every moment of my life when I reflect and contemplate, even in the midst of life, when I'm working and all things, my action, my movement, the Dhamma is with me. Non-stop. That's why 2 weeks can happen. And it can be done. It's not so difficult. I know. You don't... I understand what you say, Andy. You don't worry about how long it can sustain. It's not a matter of sustain. When your mind wants to do it, you will continuously, non-stop do it. You will just cultivate. Understand? It's just like you want to do something very well. You work towards it, understand? Until mission accomplished, understand? Then it will happen. You don't worry about after a while that thing no more. Forget about that. Never mind. No, you see, the thing is, I always give this analogy. You know how the primitive man make fire? They rub. They rub a stick or a metal rod. Or something solid against the stone. You do it continuously. You persevere. What happened? Then heat build up. Then it burn. Understand? Then the heat is hot enough to smolder the dry leaf or whatever. But if you were to do, then stop, do, then stop. What happened? You actually wasted, isn't it? Almost there already. You tired, you give up, you stop. That is what human beings are doing. Because of that, you every time find that Ayo, the fire. How come so difficult? But those who know, they can do it so easily. Because they have really perfected it. I went to Sabah. I saw this, the what they call the native. They show us how to make fire from dry leaf. You ask my wife. I think Stephanie was also there. So easy, that guy. Wow, a lot of fire. The dry leaf. Not only burn. Because they are so skillful, so used to it. But because you are not skillful, you have not experienced it, you don't have the faith, understand? How come people do can I do cannot? You keep on rubbing.
Matthew, maybe when we are alone, we can be more mindful to what we are going to do or intend to do or doing it. But when we are in the midst of work or with other people meeting doing work, then we actually cannot control or be
that is
mindful.
What most people said. When I was doing the cultivation, you know what? I was working. And I tell you, that job that I was having, not easy. I went into one of these statutory body when I reported for work. I reported for work in 1982. You know what that guy said? This is a madhouse. You know what is a madhouse? You put 10 engineers, also not enough. A lot of work, a lot of complaint, a lot of responsibility. But luckily, I'm very good. I got a very clear mind. I know how to actually streamline everything. Then I know how to actually package them into annual contract and all those things. Then I know how to actually simplify them, delegate them out. Then I solve the whole problem. Within 2 or 3 months, that whole department become transformed. Then after that, you know what I did? I was having a nice time there. It's supposed to be a madhouse. But because I understand how to handle it, I become very free. Every day I go in, like I told you all, I came early. I meditate for about an hour. Because 8:30 only they start. Sometimes half an hour, sometimes an hour. Then the moment they start, half an hour, I clear with my staff. I got a lot of staff, 600-700 staff under me. Some engineers, a lot of TA, a lot of technicians, junior technology. So I sort out whatever they need. Then the rest, I delegate it out to my another engineer. Then there's a senior assistant TA. So all this, half an hour, whatever they need to be sorted out, I sort out. Then I am free. If I got no meeting, I am free. Then I go and visit the site and all those things. Then after that, I am free. I can have early lunch if I want to. Then I come back, I meditate again. I lock my door, I meditate. Friday is the best. Long lunch break. Oh, nobody disturb me. I off the light, I do it. Then in the office, every moment, every action is beautiful. Then after that, you know what happened? I stayed there from 82 to 89. And that was how I actually got the beautiful understanding. In the midst of work, life and career, you can meditate. That time I got 2 children. Beautiful children. My child that time was, you see, one is born in 1980, one is born in 82. So that time, they are very young. But very funny, when I bring them to Brickfield, I got no problem. They know how to settle down. Then every time I go for retreat, my leave approved, no problem. I want to go spiritual trip also approved. Like nothing can stop. Actually, I don't have the window on, but somehow everything fall into place. That's why when you have that understanding and that nature, everything like fall into place. Then when I was cultivating throughout the day, that's why I told you how that guy came, the guy that Master Xuan was, Kapia, how he came and see. Very funny, in the midst of work. And all this just happened, and the book come, the teacher come, the guy come. During those years, very funny, things just happened. And I tell you, 86 to 89, everything like happened. So fast. Then you also won't believe. Because the cultivation, like, very simple. It just happened. Just happened. That's why don't try to give excuse. Don't try to say, ayo, I still got children, I still got duty, I still got my career. If your heart wants anything also, no problem. But if you have this thought, they have a lot of idea. Not now lah. When I retire lah. Or my children more independent lah. And all these things. Because I can tell you, it can be done. But please, do it at your own pace. Don't go and force yourself and then get into trouble, then come and tell me, Brother Teo say must push. I never say must push. I say, you do it at your own pace. But if you are sincere, if you truly want this way, you'll find out yourself. It can happen. I have done it. I have tried it. And I have seen many others done it. It can be done. Understand that? I have seen how my teachers, they also able to do it. There is no reason why it cannot be done. And this era is very different. The teaching is there. The condition is there. That's why it's a lot easier. It's whether you understand or you don't understand. When you understand, it can be done. Never doubt, anasara. The thought, the mind, very easy to doubt. Because you know why? You want to justify its inaction. You know what is to justify your inaction? Very easy, give a reason. Excuses. I won't be free, I cannot join you. Actually, you don't want to come. But when you want to come, no excuse. It just, the nature just find time for you. Understand? And all this, you don't have to worry. You just ask yourself sincerely, if I am serious about life, if I am sincere, I only need to determine, make the aspiration that everything will happen. Everything that happened to me, I can tell you, is due to my aspiration. Past life and this life. My mind is very clear, very strong. Whatever I want to do, I know there is a nature's law. Then I just work towards it. I never complain. I never allow the thought to tell me all those funny things. If, no. I just do what I have to do. That's why I am totally different. I do think the opposite of what the world do. I realize a lot of things I do is opposite of what normal human being do. If you think like a normal human being, very difficult. Because I funny, I don't know why. Since I calm this nature, everything I do is the opposite of what normal human being do. The thing I like also different, very different. That's why the nature knows the past that you inherit, your karmic inheritance, your karmic nature, your spiritual nature, it knows. Then when you are connected, the clarity is there. Everything just shine forth. And you understand very fast. Okay, we go on. So now we finish the third noble truth. Fourth noble truth, second turning. Okay, Engbi, you read.
This noble eightfold path that leads to the cessation of dukkha is to be cultivated.
Good. This is the second turning message of the Buddha. So, what is your first inquiry? How do you develop the reflection, the contemplation, the contemplative wisdom and the inquiry? What is your first inquiry? Like before, is it? How do you inquire? Why did the Buddha say this, isn't it? So now we analyze this sentence. The Buddha said what? This Noble Eightfold Path that leads to the cessation of dukkha is to be cultivated. What is the emphasis? So you ask yourself, why did the Buddha say this? Why not like the first Noble Truth? First Noble Truth is what? This Noble Truth of dukkha is to be understood. Understanding is enough. Understand not? No need to cultivate. But here, the emphasis is different. That's why you inquire. Why did the Buddha say this? Because Noble Eightfold Path is not a knowledge. Understand not? Understanding is not enough. You can go and like a parrot rattle out. Nobody ever thought, I know. Right view or right understanding. Then right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right samadhi, and right sati and right samadhi. Everybody can recite. Any Buddhist can recite who has the understanding or not understanding, who has heard of the Noble Eightfold Path. Or you open up a textbook, you can recite, understand? But that is not cultivated yet, understand? Cultivated means what? It's not a theory, understand? Not a knowledge, understand? It's a part of you, understand? Cultivated means you have the Noble Eightfold Path with you. Means what? You have right view. You have right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. You have the right effort to constantly purify your thought. You have the right sati, or mindfulness, to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. You have the right samadhi to see things as they are. This is cultivation, understand? That's why this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. Do you know how long it takes or not to cultivate this? It is not overnight, understand? Because, you have to cultivate. It means in the midst of life, how can you have this ability to have this right thought, right speech, right action throughout the day? Means you have to be ever mindful, understand? Heedful, constantly meditative, like what the Buddha said, apamada. That's why he says, strike on with heedfulness. You think the Buddha joke? If you don't do that, you cannot, understand? Because throughout the day, you arise your thought. You have to communicate, speak, act. You have to live your life. If you don't have this heedfulness to be constantly mindful and aware, how can you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path? Understand? That's why it's a full-time job, understand? That's why now you understand why it is a full-time job. And please don't get me wrong. 6 years ago when I came out to share, one of the Dhamma friends, he never tell me, one lady, she said, Brother Teo say full-time job. She go and give up her job. Don't want to work, go full-time, go retreat. I told her, full-time job doesn't mean you have to give up your job and meditate full-time. You go to retreat like that, you're wasting your time. Understand? Full-time job is constantly meditative, ever mindful, understand? Throughout the day. You don't have to give up your job, understand? Full-time develop the heedfulness, the awareness, understand? So that's why don't quote me and mess up the whole thing. But luckily, this lady later on informed me. Then after that, I explained, then she starts to go back to work. When she wanted to go back to work, she again so scared. You know what happened? She got this phobia. She is an IT lady, quite good, old-timer, I think about my age, I think. You know, she actually had this problem last time while working. He said, there is this constant pressure, deadline from the company. Because IT, you know, they need IT solution, they give you deadline. So she always had problem. There is a lot of pressure, a lot of fear, a lot of panic, stress. That's why she said she just worked for 3 months or maximum 6 months, then she takes 6 months off, leave, meditate, go retreat everywhere. Then later I said, no, because she came and asked me, Brother Teo, should I give up my job totally because you say full-time job? Then I asked her one question, very simple question. Are you enlightened? If you are enlightened, you can give up. No need to work. Then you do what you like. If you are still not enlightened, go back and work. She looked at me. Then after that, she came back a few days later. She said, okay, I think your advice is good. I will go back and work. Then when she wanted to apply for a job, she's so scared. She came and told me about the deadline, the phobia. I said, you don't worry. I said, you just apply. Then because she quite good, she got some contact, she applied. The interview came. She panicked. She wrote to me. He said, what if they offer me? I say, you apply for a job, they offer you, also you're scared. What is going on? I say, they offer you, you take. What happened if the deadline and the pressure come again? I say, please, you already know the Dhamma. All this fear, worry, anxiety and restlessness is a hindrance of mind, understand or not? Why can't you see? I say, what you need to do is to understand how your mind distracts you and create the hindrance. If you have faith in what you do, if you are sincere, you only need to try your best, understand or not? No boss is so unreasonable. They will not eat you up, understand or not? Worst come to the worst what? Be honest about it. I don't understand. I cannot solve it. I need somebody to help. So I say, what you need to do is just be sincere. When you are sincere, there is no pressure, understand? Because when you subject yourself to fear, your pressure will be the one that trigger off your fear. And when you have fear, what happens? You have restlessness, no clarity. How can you do your job properly? I say, not only your boss will scold you. If I'm your boss, I also tell you off. Because you got so much fear. You don't know how to actually handle your career. Understand? Or your job. So you should actually try your best. If you try your best, then if I know it's beyond you, I won't force you. Understand? But you must show to people that you have tried your best. Understand? Means you sincerely really look at it and you really cannot solve it. Then no problem. They will get somebody who has the experience to come and help you. Yeah. But if you don't even have that initiative to calm yourself down and try, there is no way you can do all this. So after I wrote to explain to her in a very nice way, she starts to have confidence. Then you know what happened? She went for the interview. Then really she got the job. She was so happy with a Japanese firm. Then when she went, first day, again, panic, call me. He said, Brother Teo, really, can I? I say, have faith in the Buddha Dhamma. I say, calm yourself down and do your best. Then she just did that. And 1 week later, she called me out. She was so happy. She said, oh, Brother Teo, thank you so much. Now when I calm myself down, I don't have pressure, I can do it, he said. All the IT solutions become more and more clear, and I can solve things. Then she remember, never get angry, never become fearful, never become what they call selfish. So she tried to have this, what they call friendliness in the office. Help colleagues, smile to people. She realized she got so many friends now. Last time she always complained, nobody liked her. Is it? She tend to have a lot of problems because her speech was not refined. Now her speech is different. The way she actually go about doing things. You see, it makes so much difference in the way you communicate with people, understand? When you treat people well, friendly, you smile, you help, you offer a solution. When you have goodness, goodness will come back to you. That's why she realized her life changed and she was so happy that time. That's why she wrote back that she was on the job for a very long time. They even extend her contract and all those things. Mm. Then later, she was on her own. Whatever it is, if you really understand the Buddha Dhamma, it can only help you. It will not make things worse. Understand? So do not have this fear. Do not have this negativity, evil roots. Constantly develop the wisdom, the understanding of the Noble Eightfold Path. So now, this fourth noble truth, the second turning, you understand the importance of cultivation. The emphasis is on cultivation. So what is your next inquiry? How can I develop the cultivation, is that? The Buddha already said what? Three turning, understand or not? So what are the three turning? First turning is listening. So go back, listen again, understand or not? Read the Dhamma again, understand or not? Then reflect and contemplate on what you hear and the sound. There is a second turning. Then do this exercise. Then after that, cultivate the four foundations. That is the third turning. Bhavana maya panya. Wisdom born of bhavana. That is the one. When you have that, you cut short your training. That's why I say this Noble Eightfold Path, to perfect it takes very long. But the shortcut is, when you develop the four foundations of mindfulness, you continuously cultivate, maximum 7 years. When you have that awakening, enlightenment, Noble Eightfold Path is there, automatic, no need to cultivate. Because that wisdom will let you have the ability to have right speech, right action, right thought, right view, everything will be there. So if you want to save time, you just go and full time for foundation of mindfulness. The only way, ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu, and guaranteed, assured by the Buddha. So when you understand all this, cultivation is not so complicated, understand? Not so difficult. No. Otherwise you think easy to cultivate this right speech, right thought, right action and right view. So difficult. Takes so long. Even the right effort takes you so long. Understand? Then to live life in accordance with the Dhamma, the right livelihood, is not easy to. Then to cultivate the four right effort, constantly doing all these things, avoiding evil, abandoning, prevent the arising, cultivate the wholesome, it's going to take you a long time. Understand? Then training your mind to be mindful, cultivate four foundation of mindfulness. It's like a lot of things to do. But then there is a shortcut, like the Buddha said. Avoid all evil, do good, then make aspiration. Understand? Then it will come. Then you don't have to work so hard. That's why you hear a lot of Jataka story during the Buddha's time. Just hear something, awaken already. Then like Moggallana and Sariputta, after meeting the Buddha, 1 week, arahant. 2 weeks, arahant. Can be done. You only need to have the understanding. Okay? Yeah. So now the four noble truth, the second turning. More or less, you know what to do. So I leave it to you all. Okay, we go on. We are supposed to do the third turning. Okay, you go to next page. Page 8, the third turning of the Four Noble Truths, third paragraph. The third turning of the Four Noble Truths is always concerning the realization path. There is enlightenment born of bhavana or meditative practice or discipline, and they are based on the follow-up of the second turning. The Buddha under the third turning proclaim as follows. First noble truth. Okay, we read together. What did the Buddha proclaim? Third turning of the first noble truth. Yes. So what is the difference between the third turning and the second turning? The only difference is what? Instead of is to be, has become has already. Understand not? Everything is the same. So, the noble truth of dukkha or suffering, instead of is to be understood, now the Buddha changes to has already been understood. Means what? You already understood, isn't it? That's why you no need to reflect and contemplate anymore. Understand not? Has already been understood means what? Who can say that? The enlightened one can say that, isn't it? Understood means what? I know what suffering is, dukkha. I know the cause of arising of dukkha. I know how to cease, how to realize that cessation. Then I know the Noble Eightfold Path. I know how to cultivate that Noble Eightfold Path that leads to the cessation of dukkha. That's why the Four Noble Truths is understood. That's why has already been understood. Means I know. I understand what suffering is. I understand the cause behind. I understand how to arrive at the cessation. And I understand how to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Means has already been understood. That's why it's bhavana maya panya. And it's very powerful. Every time you do this, the awakening comes, it's very penetrative because this is the meditative discipline. You sure awaken one, the Buddha said.
any of the Four Noble Truths when you do the third turning, because this is meditative. This is the four foundation of mindfulness. Yeah. Then the second Noble Truth, the third turning, what did the Buddha say? Has already been abandoned, means you have already abandoned it, means no more delusion, no more craving, no more attachment, no more clinging, means you are free, you already have the wisdom, the enlightenment. So again, it is the enlightenment part. That's why third turning is always concerning the realization part, that's why I put on top, or the enlightenment born of bhavana maya panya, or bhavana or meditative practices and discipline. And they are based on the follow-up of the second turning. You must have the first and second turning prepared. That's why most of the time the second turning wisdom is very powerful, very important. That's why my teacher always told me, Achayantra, we choose, reflect, contemplate and inquire until very, very clear the Dhamma. That is the second turning wisdom. Once you have this, it prepares the base for you to receive truth. Then any of the first turning, second turning or the third turning can trigger off enlightenment, awakening. Bhavana maya panya can come to be. So similarly for the third noble truth and the fourth noble truth, we just recite it. This cessation of dukkha has already been realized. Again, it is already been realized, enlightenment. Then the last one is the fourth noble truth, the third turning. This path that leads to the cessation of dukkha, which is the noble eightfold path, has already been cultivated. Means you have done what you have to do. Understand not? They call asekas. You know what is aseka? The enlightened one, gone beyond. No need to cultivate anymore. Beyond cultivation, understand? Sekha are still on the path, still need to cultivate. Wisdom that we had developed via both our earlier hearing of the sutta, which is first turning, and subsequent reflection and contemplation on those truths, second turning, can then prepare the base for us to receive the subsequent truth, born of the third turning of the Four Noble Truths, leading to the three types of wisdom. Leading to the third type of wisdom called Bhavana Maya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Bhavana is a meditative discipline. So wisdom born of the meditative discipline. Or wisdom born of Bhavana. Or the meditative training or discipline. The meditative training under the third turning will have to cover all of the Noble Eightfold Path factors. Understand not? With particular emphasis on the first path factor of right view or right understanding, supporting the samadhi or samasati and samavayama. You know what is vayama or not? Vayama is effort. So you see this word is different from virya. They always go and translate virya as effort because they see the two English words same. No, the seven factors of enlightenment and the five spiritual faculty, that virya is not effort, understand? It's a spiritual zeal or energy. Whereas vayama is effort, understand? Sama vayama, leading to the perfection of the remaining power factor. It will encompass all of life, see? That's why I know. Because the Noble Eightfold Path is about life, understand? It's only in life you need to communicate. Act, speak, arise the thought, live, livelihood. Then you need to have right understanding and right view with regards to the law of nature that governs life and existence. That's why without life, you cannot cultivate. You must go through life. The Noble Eightfold Path is about life. And that's mindfulness, ever mindful, ever heedful, to understand what is going on. So that's why it will encompass all of life. Hence the importance of daily mindfulness or heedfulness to bring about the fulfillment of the satipatthana, which is the four foundation of mindfulness, then the Noble Eightfold Path practices. The above has helped me a lot in my search for truth, and I hope you may find them beneficial too. So this was what I wrote to them, 2006. Okay, we finish. So Alice. Then the next one maybe next week next week we break, the following week. Okay, we still got a little bit of time. 10 minutes. You got any question? Or you want to report your meditation? You can. Anybody want to report your meditation? Or ask any question? Ah, yes. Use the mic. Push the thing out. Push it out. Just push it out.
Yeah, what's the meaning between an ordinary monk and a forest monk?
Oh, okay.
Because I
Okay, she wants to understand what is the difference between an ordinary monk and a forest monk. Actually, it's not really an ordinary monk and a forest monk. A monk is a monk. When you are ordained, you are called a monk. But there are certain monks that follow the forest tradition, understand? There are certain monks that live in the city, understand? And some they call it city monk also. You look around, Brickfield, Subang, all these city monks. Very seldom you see them come out and pindapat, understand? Because this is the tradition that the Buddha introduced. Pindapat means going for alms round. There is a meaning to it, understand? To be worthy of the food, you must cultivate. That's why this is a requirement of a monk. To be worthy of offering and food, you must cultivate. To be worthy to receive all these things. That's why it constantly reminds the monk to develop the cultivation. So the forest tradition like this, because if you do not cultivate, you are not worthy of the alms. So sometimes, these monks who are very strict, if they don't cultivate, if they don't go for alms round, they don't eat that day. Do you know that? Some monks, they do that. Because they feel that if they can't even go for alms round, they are not worthy of food. Then there are certain monks, if they cannot receive any food that day through alms round, they will never eat. Understand? Last time I used to hear this from Achan Jagaro. You know who is Achan Jagaro? He is also the Thai tradition from Achan Cha. He was the abbot of that temple in Serpentine. Now Achan Brahm is the abbot. Before that, he was the abbot. Achan Brahm took over. I happen to have some very good affinity with him. He is very nice. He used to tell us in some of the discussion with him. He said since he became a monk for that time was 16 or 17 years. He said he was so lucky. He only got one day, no food. Nobody offered to him. So it's not easy to be a monk. So you see, the monk is not so much of the robe alone, understand? The monk is your heart. Your heart wants to become a monk, then you become a monk, understand? Then you must understand why you choose to be a monk. That's why the Buddha, under the what they call ordination ceremony, they got a very good understanding and write-up. I have read some of this. How to reflect, how to contemplate, and when you renounce, what are the things you should understand? Why do you do all this? And what are the things you have to reflect on? And the Patimokkha, the monk's rules or precepts, they are designed to enable the monk to become enlightened very fast. Because it demands a very high level of mindfulness. Understand? Everything that is the major rule, you must not offend. You must not break. If you break, out you go. you lost your ability to become monk. Minor offense, you can still be pardoned. Understand? So all these are not easy. But there are time to be monk. Understand? There are time to do other things too. You will come to know your destiny. The monk's life is pretty beautiful. But there are periods where you will become monk. Then after you have gone through, when you go the Bodhisattva way, you know, Bodhisattva has to take all kinds of birth. So sometimes they have this understanding, they will come differently. Differently. If you read the other one, the Vimalakati Sutta, that one is a very interesting one. This one, he liked to come as a lay person. This is a very, very famous Bodhisattva. He lived very long. According to the Sutta, I said, he has served, you listen, don't panic, 90 million Buddhas. 90 million Buddhas. He has served. You know how long that thing is now. One world cycle, you're lucky you get three. Sambhasambuddha. Or sometimes four, five. Sometimes certain world system, zero. Sometimes only one. But this guy, according to the Sutta, if I don't get it wrong, it seems he has served 90 million Buddhas. That's why he knows all the Buddhas. And this Sutta is very famous, very interesting. And he's a lay person. And he always said, as a lay person, when I come, I can go to the prostitute then to help the prostitute. He can do all those things the monk cannot do. But he has a lot of wisdom. He has a lot of wisdom. I just went into the internet and checked a bit. It seems pretty interesting, this guy. But as I said, according to the Sutta, because certain Theravada monk, I don't know, they don't believe all this. they have doubt over all this. But please, we are not here to argue right or wrong. No division. Accept with an open mind. Understand how people cultivate, then you will understand how they develop all this. So a lot of these things, you will come to understand on your own. When you have the Dhamma and the understanding, all this will become clear to you. There is no more doubt, no more question, no more of all those like misunderstanding to argue. Because like the Buddha said, focus on the handful of leaf, anasana, which is the Four Noble Truths, where this is conducive for enlightenment. The rest are not so important, anasana. So have an open mind to receive truth, then proceed, cultivate. Whatever that can benefit you, use it. The rest, if you don't understand, have an open mind. Do not conclude. Because sometimes people's understanding is different. So if you don't have that understanding, then you conclude it differently, you create unnecessary karma. Very dangerous. Never try to be smart. Have an open mind. Then you don't make mistake. Have appropriate speech. Do not create unnecessary wrong speech. Very important. Does that answer satisfy your question? Yeah. So now you know, forest monk means they follow the forest tradition. They go Pindapat. Thailand got a lot. So far I only know Thailand very strong in the forest tradition. That's why I used to go there. I got a lot of affinity there. I don't know why. A lot of my teachers are from there. Okay. I think. Yeah.
Sorry, Vadil, one.
Yes.
Can I ask?
We Vadil got 4 more minutes.
To elaborate on the second aspect of the five aggregates that is in the mind.
Yes.
Thank you.
You see, this five aggregate of form and mind, there are two aspects. The first aspect is as a human being, okay? We have gone through, You, as a human being, you have a physical form, then you have a mind. So the four aggregate of mind, feeling, perception, sankhara, and consciousness, together with this form, physical form, rupang, this is the first category of five aggregate as a human being. Okay, the second aspect is in the mind, the mental five aggregate that the Buddha talked about under the dependent origination, the dwelling. How does the form enters the mind? Because if you want to talk about mental five aggregate, there must be this form and mind. Understand now? So what is the mind? The mind is the knowing element. Okay? It can know things, correct or not? It has the power to know. How does it know? It knows through perception, through memory. Understand not? Just like the aggregate of perception through memory can bring the external form into the mind. So every moment of sense experience, you can perceive this external form and you can bring it to the mind. Just now I already explained, the mind is the knowing element. Anything that the mind knows is the form in the mind. You write it down. Anything that the mind knows is the form in the mind. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Anything that the mind knows is the form in the mind. Anything that the mind knows is the form in the mind. Form in the mind. Form or rupa, the aggregate of form in the mind. Because the mind is the knowing element. So this mind can know things. Like when you see something, when you see the Buddha image, how do you know it's the Buddha image? The thing that your mind know is what? The Buddha image is there. And how does it know? Through your memory is there. Then you have to perceive it through your seeing consciousness is there. So through your seeing consciousness together with your memory, you come to perceive this external form, the Buddha Rupang. This is how the external form can enter the mind, understand? Then you have your five aggregate of form and mind. So the dependent origination becomes totally different when you understand it this way. Then it's no more in the three lifespan type of traditional explanation, understand? Otherwise they cannot reconcile. Because under the law of dependent origination, the first two links is what? Avijja paccaya sankhara means what? Dependent on ignorant condition what? Sankhara. Supposed to be activity of mind. But they cannot explain. They use the three period of time. They say ignorant condition coming activity, understand? Because of ignorance, you have rebirth, understand not? Karmic activity, understand not? So karmic activity, they say condition, consciousness. Sankhara paccaya vijnanang, they call it that consciousness, the rebirth consciousness. That's why they say dependent on this rebirth consciousness, the condition, form am I. You say a living being is born, understand not? And then they continue, understand not? Then they have the what they call dependent on this five aggregate of form and mind arise a six sense basis. Then upon contact, feeling, then the whole thing continue. But the Buddha would not have taught this type of dependent origination, understand? Because it's only applicable once over three lifespan, understand? It teach you for what? Not practical. It can be one of the possibility of life, understand? But it's not practical, understand? So what the Buddha actually taught was the second aspect. The Buddha said, avijja paccaya sankhara means dependent on ignorance. It conditions mental activity. Mental activity, of course, God is mental volition too inside. That's why you think, understand? When you have delusion, then you have ignorance, you don't understand it there. So one thing to understand, what do you do? One thing to know, one thing to understand, you think it there, like in school. You don't understand, go back and think about it. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara. So activity of mind come to be, thinking come to be. Then what happens when you think? You make mental contact in there. The moment you think, you make mental contact in there. What is the form? The mental form that you take in, understand? So the mind can make contact because mind is an organ, understand? So the every time you think, you make contact. That's why consciousness come to be, understand? Thought consciousness come to be, understand? That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam. Vijnanam is not rebirth consciousness. It's thought consciousness. Every moment of thought consciousness, understand? That part they don't know. They don't understand. So when this vijnanam come to be, then they cannot reconcile because they say, after that form and mind come out. How can the form and mind come out without rebirth consciousness? Understand? But the Buddha said the form already went in through perception. Understand? How do you perceive my voice? Through your hearing consciousness, you perceive it. That's why the external form enters the mind. That's why he said, dependent on this thought consciousness, mental consciousness, arise namarupa, form and mind. And this form and mind is at the consciousness level. The second aspect, the five aggregate of form and mind. This one is very important. That dependent on this arise the salayatana, six sense basis. Now become meaningful. Understand? Salayatana means what? For this consciousness to arise, it needs the sense basis. Understand? Understand? Because like when you see something, your perception is what? Color, shape, and form, understand? Upon contact, seeing consciousness come to be, understand? Because the mind make contact, understand? Mental consciousness come to be. But because you use the eye as an organ, this consciousness arise. But because of delusion, you grasp and cling, understand? But for it to arise, it need one of the sense bases, understand? Because mind alone, it can create thought consciousness. But this thought gets its form from one of the organs, understand? One of its organs. So if it's through seeing, then the eye become the basis, understand? If it's through thinking, the mind become the sense basis, understand? That's why dependent on this nama-rupa, sense basis come to be, understand? And then dependent on the six sense basis, salayatana, contact come to be. Then dependent on contact, feeling come to be. Understand? Then dependent on feeling, because you never do the second foundation of mindfulness, vedana upasana, craving come to be. You have not developed the wisdom. You only saw manasikara, wise attention not there. That's why it condition, feeling condition, craving. That's why you have vedana paccaya tanha. Then from there, it condition, grasping, becoming. Then you take birth. That is the real birth. Birth of the consciousness. Lust. You become the lustful human being. So when it takes birth, means transgression. You come out really. You know what is the difference between grasping and becoming? When there is craving, like you see somebody. Or maybe take a rapist, for example. Very easy. He see there is craving for the beautiful form, understand? Because when he start to see, there is this sensation, vedana paccaya tanha, craving. There is a desire. Then he grasps at what he see, understand? He desire it very strongly. That's why it's called grasping. When I grasp means I not only desire, I want it, understand? Then it condition becoming. You become that. Means what? You become that lustful nature, understand? Then when you act out of it, means you are born into it, understand? That's how transgression comes to be. When that thing happens, the whole mess of suffering comes to be. You violate the karma, you break everything. That's why the law of dependent origination, the second aspect, can be explained. Then the law of dependent origination becomes every moment, every instant of your thought process, understand?
This is the one that the Buddha talked about. This is the one that can allow you to see and understand how your mind functions, how craving come to be, how due to ignorance your mind start to stir, thinking come to be. That how you make contact with the mind, it trigger of thought consciousness. You can see them in your meditation, keep on happening. And when you understand, it cannot happen already. Because you are not deluded by it. You don't create anymore. Then you see things as they are. You want to think, you think. You don't want to think, no need to think. Then thought become your friend, understand? A tool for you to use to live life. Then as a user, you have wisdom. The user is wise, not deluded. Thought become wholesome. That's how right thought come to be. You cannot try to do good, understand? You cannot try to arise a right thought. If the user is evil, he can never know how to use thought correctly. You ask an evil person to do good. Can he do good? Because he's evil. Can he do good? But the moment he's no longer evil, everything he do with the money become good. Like money, thought is like money, neither wholesome or unwholesome. It depends on the user. If the user is evil, money become evil. Thought is the same. If the user of thought is deluded, heedless, thought become unwholesome. So this is how it can be explained and understood. Okay, we better end. I think we exceeded. Exceeded by 8 minutes. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Okay, sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa jirang rakantu lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Ita vata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed one. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let this marriage accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all do be well and happy. Okay, now we will recite the invocation of blessing for our country. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampatihi tocha fito bhavatu lokocha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season, and may there be a rich and good harvest, and may the world be prosperous and peaceful always. And may the government of the day and ruler or king of the day be righteous. Okay, the last one is making aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawat nivana patia. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect to all the worthy ones.